This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Fort Myers-based musicians Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield join us today to perform live in studio. The duo performs prolifically at venues throughout Southwest Florida, and they've been featured at festivals and notable music venues throughout the country. Schneider is a singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist, providing vocals, guitar, mandolin, banjo, harmonica, and percussion. Mayfield is also a multi-instrumentalist who brings tight vocal harmonies, piano, mandolin, guitar, and percussion as well. Schneider's songwriting has garnered praise at the Grassy Hill Careville, New York competition in Texas, the Telluride Blues and Brews Acoustic Blues competition in Colorado, and the Falcon Ridge Folk Festival Emerging Artists Showcased in New York. Schneider and Mayfield have also performed official showcases at Folk Alliance conferences in New York, Austin, Texas, and in Asheville, North Carolina. Roy Schneider also appeared in season 5 of NBC's The Voice. Roy is also the creator of the cartoon The Humble Stumble, which enjoyed widespread syndication. They've also recorded a number of albums, including the most recent 10 in the Pen, which came out in 2015, and they've got a brand new album coming out in November. Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thanks for having us today.
And as always, I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And before we get into the conversation here, let's just go ahead and kick things off with a song. Roy, tell us what we're going to hear and maybe tell us a little bit about it by way of introduction.
Well, this one probably has, most of the songs that I write or we write are real, about something that happened that really triggered. This was more about the word subjugate came into my head one day, and all of a sudden it led to subjugated love. I don't know. I was thinking about writing a song, and I thought that must be a Bob Dylan song. It just sounded like the name of a Bob Dylan. So I started looking it up, and I thought, well, it's too good, so I just have to write it. I don't know. I think I've been listening to some cynical blues songs and stuff before I wrote this. So this was more about the tapping into maybe relationships gone wrong. It's called Subjugated Love. This will be on the new Reckless Saints CD coming out in November.
Subjugated love, subjugated love. I don't like the way around me, baby. How you been hanging above my head at night when all the lights go down? Yeah, you're giving me the creeps, and I just can't sleep no how. Throw me in the sand, throw me in the sand. Can't seem to hold my head up high since landing on your land. Every dance ends up as duck and run. If I ain't freezing on your glacier, babe, I'm frying on your sun. Subjugated love, subjugated love. I don't like your web around me, babe. How you been hanging above my head at night when all the lights go down? Yeah, you're giving me the creeps, and I just can't sleep no how. Shove me out to sea, shove me out to sea. Stick me in lifeboat, baby, silence killing me. Cause there's only you, nothing else do I see. Between the open air and brine, maybe I'll find some time to breathe. Bring me to the ground, bring me to the ground. Ever since I climbed your mountain, babe, I can't find my way down. Seems like every dance ends up as dark and rough.
on your cliff, baby, I'll fly tonight or die. Said I'm standing on your cliff, honey, I'll fly tonight or die.
All right, Subjugated Love. Yeah, I love that. Love that from the Reckless Saints. Kind of a WGCU exclusive there. That's off their new album that hasn't been released yet. So I love getting those sneak previews. Thanks so much for performing with us. And just, I want to let our audience members know, or listeners rather, because they can't, you know, see what's going on here. We've got Kim, you know, not just doing vocals, but also playing tambourine. One hand's doing the, you know, the brushes on the snare. And then Roy's here actually doing the bass, playing guitar and harmonica. It's really just a... I can't imagine how you keep all that straight in your brains and then still sing and remember the words. Great to hear you guys performing. And I've seen you guys referred to as, you know, both Reckless Saints, but then also as Schneider and Mayfield. Is there a preference, or does it?
Well, I know the whole thing was we were trying to make it easier to remember, and I think in the process we've, you know.
Yeah, we jumped the gun a little bit. The new record is called Reckless Saints. We were going to kind of slowly transition into that.
But. Right. One day we decided that's going to be our new name. And then, of course, I've got two albums out. We've got a Pandora station. I've been on, you know, on the radio for 10 years as Roy Schneider.
Right.
So suddenly the idea that just calling ourselves Reckless Saints and starting at day one again after 10 years seemed a little silly. So we just decided to be Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield for this album and title it Reckless Saints.
Got it.
And then I thought maybe if we, you know, it might be easier as far as getting that out there as we move into this name.
Well, tell me a bit about your origin story. I'm wondering how you guys came together as a music duo.
Well, I've played music all my life. Well, Kim did too. You know, she took piano and, you know, she was musical. I was performing as a solo when we met. Mostly just playing covers in the bars. I was writing songs, but I didn't play my songs out much because I wasn't playing in the kind of places where anybody was really listening. You know, they tap their foot and go, woo, when you're done. But,
sure,
you know, so that's kind of what was going on there. And I guess the reason we became ultimately a duo and that we're doing originals and doing the thing that we do now is because of Kim. She said, well, you write songs, and every night you go out and you play, and you're playing, you know, cover songs. What's going on? And I explained, well, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking to sit there and sing songs that really mean something to you and people aren't really hearing you, so it's easier to sing somebody else's song and be ignored.
Sure.
So Kim kind of took it upon herself, I would say. I should let her talk here. But
yeah, we came together romantically in the beginning, and we were just dating, and he found out I played piano, and I'd never played music with anybody. I played, you know, by myself at home, and he started playing along, and it just kind of blew my mind that he could improvise so easily.
Oh, it was the sheet music thing.
That's right.
Because you said, well, how do you know what to play? You don't have any music.
I could only play if there were notes in front of me.
Sure.
So he opened up this whole thing. He said, well, you play guitar, you know chords, you understand. I'm like, yeah.
Well, so this is in C. Play a C and we're good.
Do that on the piano. So, yeah.
I completely understand that transition. When you start out with the classical training, like the idea of improvising is really scary until you realize you already have all the rudiments in your head.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And then you trust them. Yeah.
Yeah. So the relationship started before the music collab. And you've been together for like 15 years now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, 15 years. And he just kept pushing me. He just kept pushing me more and more and to play and to do things with him. And it's evolved a lot.
Well, we have sort of a joke story about it, that it was all about the sandwich. When we started traveling and touring and playing, you know, at places around the country that we weren't, you know, around here, you go to a place, you get to know the place. Well, here you're showing up for the first time every time.
And we were playing wherever they would have us.
Sure.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
So we would play coffee houses for sandwiches and tips.
For tips. Yeah.
But the sandwiches only went to the musicians, not the musician's girlfriend.
Oh. So we just drove 5 hours and she helps me load in and everything, and we still have to buy her sandwich. It was like,
so
okay, we're at
to.
Least getting two sandwiches out of this deal.
I had to sing for my sandwich.
Is there a song for that? Please tell me there's a song about that.
There needs to be. Yeah, okay. I'm hoping one day I'm going to wake up and go, ah, grab my guitar and go to it.
And Roy, tell me a bit about your early introductions in music. I mean, did you come from a particularly musical family? I mean, I had read that at least for a time, your father worked as a musical performer.
Yeah, and you know, it seems to me what I've seen is when you have a musical parent, or whatever the parent's into, the kid's not going to be into, right? Because they want to get up and find their own way. So my dad being musical was a good thing, but because I didn't, you know, we didn't grow up in the same house. Mm-hmm. From a long distance, I didn't have anyone judging. So I was trying to learn chords and, you know, yeah, we'd go camping and he'd play songs as we camped. And I thought that was just magic because I was already playing in junior high school. I was playing drums and harmonica and singing.
Oh, so guitar wasn't the first instrument you picked up?
No, I thought that was impossible. I mean, just the looks, someone to take six pieces of wire and, you know, and move their hands and do all, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. I never thought I would play, but it's because I like to sing. And then I didn't have my guitar playing friends around anymore for a while. And I had to, you know.
And he learned how to harmonize with the Eagles.
Was that an early musical influence of yours?
Well, I suppose I wouldn't, you know, nowadays call them a favorite, but certainly their vocal harmonies were incredible, and I was very attracted to that voices in harmony thing. So my dad sang Lion Eyes. He had a version of Lion Eyes on a tape that he'd made where he's singing it solo. So I harmonized with my dad's tape.
Okay.
When I was very young, and I thought, oh, maybe I can do this.
Yeah. When do you think you first made that transition to, you know, experimenting with, you know, composing and writing your own music?
I'd had a very dramatic year. I was in a place called Straight Incorporated. You can Google that. That was a nightmarish. And then I got out of there and was trying to find a way to just have some peace and, you know. And so I sat down and started writing really sad songs, but it felt good to get them out. Mm-hmm. They weren't very good songs, but... You know, after a couple of them, they got better. Like by the third song, it was much better, and I thought maybe I can do this. So I started writing songs and pretty much keeping them in my pocket. I didn't play them for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and hear another live tune. Tell us what we're going to hear.
It's called "If I Die Tomorrow," and it's also on the new CD.
Okay.
Do you want Kim has a little story she sometimes tells about how...
Well, he wrote a song for me to sing lead on, because I wasn't writing it yet. And I learned the song, and I put my spin on it, and played it for him, and he said, well, didn't you listen to the recording? That's not how I... And I said, no, this, I can't do it like you do. I have to do it like me, and as it turns out, he didn't like what I did, and I didn't really like the song that much. It was a little just, like, too happy. So he came back with this song.
Okay.
A little more serious, I guess.
Yes. Well, she was right. I hadn't really thought about that. I gave it to her, and I had gotten too attached to it. So with this one, I wrote it, made sure the words and the rhythm was right, and then I just immediately threw it to her and just said, do your thing. I'm just going to forget I even know about this song. And then, yeah, we came back together, and here we had this.
If I die tomorrow, will I understand how my oceans are? Why my rocks are dirt and sand? Will I then be able to crawl out of this desert sun that burns my back and keeps me on the run? If I die tomorrow, will I overcome all fear? May I always wish that I could through all my trials and tears. When you're open, will I finally understand how I ended up in the desert of the heart of
The dulcet tones of Kim Mayfield performing live in studio with us with Roy Schneider. That song was If I Die Tomorrow, and that's off of their anticipated album, Reckless Saints, which will be coming out in November. We're so happy to have you guys in studio today. Thank you
Thanks.
So much.
Well, we're happy to be here.
And Kim, you know, we had touched on you, you know, playing piano, but, you know, kind of sitting in your house and playing for yourself and not really performing out for a while until you met Roy.
Yeah.
Did you play the guitar and the mandolin and percussion back then too? Or?
No, I was teaching myself guitar when we met, and I bought a guitar on eBay. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying because I had this Sean Colvin CD with cover songs on it, and I wanted to be Sean Colvin. So
who doesn't? I still want to be Sean Colvin. Tell me about, you know, your early upbringing. Did you start like piano lessons when you were a kid, or
I was you know, nine, yeah. And you know, it started just learning pop songs and for fun, and then I got a little bit more serious in my 20s. I studied with a man who went to Juilliard. He played Carnegie Hall. Lovely man in Key West called Yehuda Gutman. Hmm. And and he just had this 7-foot Steinway. It was magical, and I had so much fun with him, and he really improved my technique a lot. And I just lost it one day when he told me that the trill that I fudged was vulgar.
Oh.
And it just kind of sucked the joy out of it for me then, so I stopped with the lessons, and I started just playing things for me for fun.
And were you you know, experimenting with songwriting and composition then too?
No, not at all. But I listened to a lot. You know, I've always just loved music. I grew up in a house full of music, and I just wrote my first songs this year.
Okay, I was going to out you if you weren't.
Okay,
I kind of feel like my little plot sort of worked. The reason that we were talking earlier about that last song, I wanted to write a song for her to sing just because. Whenever we're in a situation, like sometimes when we travel, we're in a like a round robin thing, and each person's doing maybe two songs, and they say, you do a song. And she would often say, well, I don't write, but, and then play a cover song. And I think, well, you shouldn't have to, you know, so let's do an original song that you sing, but I'll just write it. You know, that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that might stimulate some writing, because then as soon as she learned the song that I wrote for her to sing, which I think she definitely made it her own. I mean, that the song changed a bit to be her flavor, and I thought, well, that's great. And then maybe 2-3 days later, you had your first song.
Well, I was invited by there's a local organization, the ACMA, I'm sure you know about.
Oh yeah, we were going to get into that. Yes.
They invited me to do a round with, it was two other women, Annie Wenz and Melissa Welke.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, check them out.
I'm like, I gotta write songs. I can't go up there and play cover songs. That would be so sad.
So nothing like pressure to get you to do
motivation.
Excuse me, to be creative.
Well, we featured some of the ACMA musicians just a couple months ago, back in June, and it just seems like such a great sort of supportive community of like-minded people.
Oh, absolutely.
it's a great, great thing. I can't say enough good things about them.
They give us props so much good music. That I don't think we really deserve because we didn't help make the place, but like to mention that
you inspired them though to.
Yeah, they liked what I was doing. When it all started, I was still solo, and I came and I played a house concert at the now president's house, Alice Schaefer. And pardon me. I'm kind of sorry. I'm trying to stay away from the mic here. I occasionally.
It's like we're all in the same
boat what's
today.
Going on down at the beach and everything. Yeah, it's kind of. But what the heck was I talking? I'm sorry. Alice, yeah. And so they all, people who supported what I was doing, said, wow, you write your own songs and you travel around and wow. We were doing that. And they just thought, well, we want to have, you and, because then we talked about all the other people. We're like, there's a whole scene out there. There's hundreds and hundreds of people that write great songs and travel and sing that you haven't heard of, but you'd probably like. And so they decided to make a venue happen so that they could start inviting people from the road to come and play. So
right.
We've had some great, great people in there.
Really good.
Well, let's go ahead and hear our third song from you guys. Tell me what we're going to hear.
Well, it's another one from the upcoming CD. And or download or whatever you whatever format people might get it in. I the seed for it came during the 2016 campaign, and it's that's all I'll say.
It's called Poison Arrow.
But it really it's just kind of based on the old what goes up must come down. Take your poison arrow. Put it to your bow. Point it way up high, pull it back and let it go. Really don't matter what you hit or where it goes. Got to shoot down anything that ain't what we all know. Shoot down anything that ain't what we all know. When the arrows turn and they head back for the ground, with twice the force they had by the time they're halfway down, won't you spread the word, my darling, all around. The sky is shooting arrows, Lord, what brought this plague around? The sky is shooting arrows, Lord, what brought this plague around? And we'll dress up. Say you don't know. If you want me, babe, I'll be someplace that you don't know.
Take your poison arrow and put it to your bow. Point it way up high, pull it back and let it go. Really don't matter what you hit or where it goes. Got to shoot down anything that ain't what we all know. Got to shoot down anything that ain't what we all know. Got to shoot down anything.
All right. That was Poison Arrow from Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield performing live in studio today. November can't come soon enough for me because that is going to be on their album, Reckless Saints, which is going to be released that month. And Roy, I'm really sort of interested in your former career here as a cartoonist. You had one cartoon in particular, The Humble Stumble, that actually reached syndication, which is an incredible feat. Can you tell me about that? And I guess sort of, you know, that creative outlet running concurrently with your music.
Yeah. Do you play this on both? Well, I've always done both, music and drawing, specifically cartoons.
I mean, okay.
I've just always loved cartoons. Not the dumb ones, man. I like the ones where you have to actually know stuff. Warner Brothers, you had to know some things to get the jokes, you know.
It took you, what, 10 years to get?
But yeah, I tried to get a comic strip syndicated forever. Well, I'd forgotten all about comic strips, though, for a while, even though that's kind of how I learned to read. I had Snoopy and Dennis the Menace books when I was a kid. And,
uh-huh.
That's how I learned that Tongu is actually tongue and things like that. Yeah. I learned about words by reading. But Calvin and Hobbes came along, you know, when I got to be in my late teens. And yeah, I wanted to be Bill Watterson. And I can't make any claim to being anywhere close to what Bill Watterson was, but I thought, I want to do that. I want to be able to, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got it syndicated, though, finally, after I became a member of the National Cartoonist Society, which took a long time to get into, and started passing my stuff around more and more, and it happened. Jake Morrissey, who was the one who discovered Gary Larson, I like to say,
uh-huh.
The Far Side
Far
discoverer,
side, yeah.
Liked me too.
All right.
Thank you, Jake. But yeah, it just, you know, it just wasn't in enough papers to make it worth taking. I mean, when you have to do a daily strip and a Sunday, nonstop pretty much forever until further notice, it's a little stressful because you think about it every minute of the day.
And it turned out that you were making more money playing
more
music.
Money singing in the bars than I was.
I mean, you were in some big papers, though. I think the Chicago Tribune picked you up.
Yeah. Or? Now, you know, that right there is kind of what makes me feel okay about everything that happened thereafter. Because I was living in Chicago during the time that I was intensely trying to get syndicated, and I was subscribing to the Trib, and every time I picked up my Tribune to read the Sunday comics, I thought, one day I'm going to be in here. Mm-hmm. And now I have a little stack of Tribune Sunday comic sections with me in them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got out of it for myself.
It was The Humble Stumble, like, autobiographical in nature?
Yeah, it was about a single dad. And that's the thing. You know, for years I'd been submitting these, like, funny animals and weird made-up characters and trying to do so. I was more into, like, you know, I was into, like, Bloom County and you know, so I was trying to capitalize on my weirdness, and I guess I was a little too weird or something. But when I finally, my wife and I split up and I had my daughter, and being a single dad, I started noticing all the things I was messing up because, you know, I was the fun one. I would go to work all day and then I'd come home and my daughter would scream, "Daddy," and jump in my arms and we'd play games and tickle, tickle, and mm-hmm. she'd go to bed. I mean, but now I had to, like, make school lunches and wash clothes and, you know, make sure that everything was taken care of and that she was healthy. And I made so many mistakes trying to be the domestic person. And which is not to say that men can, you know.
It was sometimes comical, yes.
But those were our roles at that time, yeah. And so it all started with the spoon. I tell people, you know, for days I was sending her to school with applesauce in her lunch, the little cup
sure.
with the foil top that you. And apparently, I just never sent her a spoon. So by the third day, she said, "Dad, thanks for the applesauce, but can you Can you give me a spoon? I never. And so that.
I'm just picturing her like eating it with a finger or something.
She would describe it. She said, yeah, I got to kind of squeeze it and, you know, suck it out, you know, open up just enough so that I can get my lips on it and suck the applesauce out of the cup. And I thought, okay, I can't let her do that. And so that I was so proud that I remembered to put the spoon in the bag. And she came home and said, thank you for the spoon. You didn't give me any applesauce. And that's when the light went on. I was like, this is what I need to be writing about right here. And three syndicates were interested. So
nice. Well, and you know
it just didn't really, you know, reach the the level of making me a good solid living that I was hoping it would.
Sure. We talk to a lot of musicians on the show, and we discuss like the songwriting process, and something that seems kind of universal is sort of like the therapeutic nature of songwriting. And I'm wondering if there's something like that with creating these the cartoon narrative that was also kind of therapeutic, even though it was a lot of pressure.
Very much so. In the beginning, it was all about, it was mostly about the dad, which of course, was me, and I tried to.
And you had the alter ego, the hippie dude, friend.
Oh, yeah, Lincoln came along later because I needed somebody to say all the weird things that I was thinking. And since Joe, the dad, was the responsible single father, I couldn't have him be too weird or, you know, that might raise some concerns about his parenting or something. So later on, his friend Lincoln showed up who could just say the most bizarre off-the-wall things.
Yeah.
And Joe had to be the straight guy.
Well, I was reading an interview you had done about the cartoon, and this is maybe a decade ago, but something that you had said stuck out to me, and it was something along the lines of, really good storytelling in a cartoon can carry mediocre art, but mediocre storytelling isn't going to carry, you know, the other way around.
And
I'm just wondering if there's
feel that way. I didn't know I'd said that.
You said it much more eloquently. I wish I had the quote here. But do you feel like there's some parallels that between, you know, the creative process for the cartoon and writing music?
Probably. I mean, because I wouldn't say I'm a stellar musician. I'm a versatile musician, and I think I'm adequate and able and all that on a lot of different instruments, but I'm no superstar. But I feel like the songs, if the songs have something to say, and you know, if the music can just act as a good vehicle to bring the words, I don't know how to say it any better.
Okay, well, we'll come back to songwriting in a bit.
I've seen some beautifully drawn strips with bad writing that I got instantly bored with. I'm like, well, those are nice pictures, but I don't want to read this.
Right.
And yeah, I kind of take the same approach with music, I think.
Let's go ahead and hear our fourth song.
Oh, I thought you were going to... Oh, are we running, burning through it? I thought we were going to... We're not doing your song. Okay. Last minute changes. Mm-hmm. That never happens with us.
No.
This is also on the new CD. This is the only one that we didn't write.
This is a Blaze Foley song. And our album is coming out just a few days before the midterm elections. It's called Election Day, even though it's really not a political song. I thought it'd be a good time to put this song out. And we on the album, we have Gerf Morlix playing and singing with us. Anyone who's really into the Americana genre might know who Gerf is. And he and Blaze Foley were real good friends. So really excited to have him on it. So it goes like 1, 2, 3. How you like that counting? Looks been bad.
burglary.
Be a burglary.
Don't you just go and
don't
see.
You just
be alright, be alright, be alright.
Election Day by Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield. That song is on their new album, Reckless Saints, coming out in November, and they're gracing us in our studios, treating us to some live music this hour. You can join us by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And, you know, we were sort of talking about the songwriting process a little bit before that song, and I was curious if you could give us some more insights into, you know, how you approach songwriting. Is it something you kind of do collaboratively, or do you, Roy, do you kind of work separately and then you're like, hey, check this out, I'm working on this?
Yeah, we have yet to co-write.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, I don't do well
co-creating. I'm just too controlling when it comes to art, you know. I want to make my thing my way, and that's why with the song that I wrote for Kim, that's why, yeah, as soon as I got it done, I had to just let it go right away, or else, yeah, I knew I'd get too attached and to having it a certain particular way.
Yeah. So I don't really know your process. I think it may be similar where you start with like a little riff and some chord progressions, and then you start hearing a melody, and then you think, well, how does this feel?
It's always different with me, mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes the music, sometimes the words, sometimes, like in the case of the first song today, Subjugated Love, it was more about the title, and I thought, how would that song sound?
So. Yeah. And you know, Kim, you had talked about, you know, Roy singing along and figuring out the harmony to, you know, his dad's version of Lion Eyes, and I'm wondering if maybe that's how you approach these really great tight vocal harmonies that you do. Do you just hear what he does? And
yeah, it didn't come as easily to me.
No.
I struggled for a long time, and it was mainly a confidence issue, but because I thought my voice was weird, so yeah. I've come to terms with it. And I don't know, it's just kind of, I guess it's anything you practice enough, so it's grown. That must, the harmony muscle is growing.
Right.
The harmony muscle.
and
they have special machines for that at Planet Fitness.
Yes. do you usually write the lyrics first, or a melody, or does it really just vary depending on the song?
Well, once it gets rolling, it happens together. You know, so usually I'll be playing along and I think, oh, that's kind of catchy, and maybe I'll get a couple little words, and then Yeah. And then eventually I do have to put down the guitar.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you get trapped by your musical ability. Like, you know, if you might be able to hear a song, and you're, for me, I've realized sometimes if I just don't pick up the guitar once I get started, you know, because I might hear it go a different way. And then sometimes I hear it in my head and I'll sing it into my phone nowadays and think, well, what chord was that?
Yeah.
And then I'll go figure out how to play the song. Yeah.
Well, again, I'm thinking back to the cartooning and, you know, just like with that kind of daily deadline pressure, you have to be very disciplined. And I'm wondering if with songwriting, you kind of bring that same approach to it. Like, do you set aside time to write, or is it just more like when the inspiration strikes?
It's weird. I wish I could just write. The funny thing is I'm so, because I like songwriting and I like being creative, I feel like I'm playing and I'm just goofing off, even though it's what I do for a living now. Yeah. So I never allow myself the chance to just sit down and write. I'm like, well, I really need to write some new songs, but how can I justify that when the studio needs vacuuming, or not that I vacuum the studio a lot, but you know, the garbage has to go out, or the...
We are our own booking agent. We are our own, well, we just hired a publicist, so we actually have somebody now on our team.
For the first time, yeah, we have someone else to toot the horn.
Everything, you know.
So yeah, there's always other things that need getting done, and then eventually, though, I'll think to myself, I've thought of 3 or 4 or 5 or dismissed as many as however, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll get back to it later when I have more time. And then you always forget, even though you swear you won't, because it's really there when it's there. And I think, oh, okay, I'll come back to this in an hour. And it's gone.
Yeah.
So my phone is full of snippets now that I haven't written.
Oh, you know, all right.
Or I'm driving down the road or something, and I just think of something. So I'll just holler it into the phone. After telling Siri to record me, just so everybody knows, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not a look at your phone while you drive guy at all.
That's right. Don't text and drive.
I get mad at those people.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to hear our next song is called Don't Text and Drive. No, I'm kidding. Tell us what our next song is going to be.
Wouldn't that be great if it were?
Great segue.
Good segue, yeah. Well, this one's a little bit older.
Do we have time to do them?
Oh, yeah.
This one's a little bit older. It's from the Walls That Talk CD that came out in 2012. I wrote this at my grandmother's house because her place is where I went after my whole straight ordeal and running away and being on my own for a couple of years and all this rough stuff trying to get through the world. And then suddenly I was at Nana's house, and it was a peaceful sanctuary. And so I've always gone back there. Now she had to sell the place, and you know, she's 93 now. She's in the assisted living right down here. But this, I wrote this. This I was one of the last trips there, and I think I could see the writing on the wall that the house is going to be gone. So, yeah, this is called One for the Rabbits. I think I'll play a little dinner music for the rabbits in the backyard. Why's it got to be so hard? Damn mosquitoes. You know I'm gonna stay out anyway, watch the sun as it goes down, feel it wash away my frown, spreading all those colors around, not letting me down. No one ever lets me down. No. Watching the fireflies glowing in the dark now. No one ever understood how. I don't need to know right now. I just wanna be here now. Just be right here now. Many times it's taken me far from home. Welcome me back with open arms, never letting me wander too close to home. Ah.
money woes and future woes too. Worry about all the things I guess I'm supposed to. But I know everything is already alright. Every time I make it through one more night. I only hope some part of that spirit will stay. Even when the keeper is far, far, far away. Oh, oh. But I guess I.
Kim Mayfield kicking me right in the heart with that song. That was one for the rabbits. I love that tune. Well, we are coming up towards the end of the hour, so I want to make sure that we get one, at least one more song in here. So I'll just say real quickly, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, we've been speaking with Roy Schneider and Kim Mayfield. They're getting ready to hit the road for a brief tour. It's going to take them to venues in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and North Carolina, but then they'll be back in Southwest Florida towards the end of the month. They'll be doing performances August 25th and 26th at Naples Botanical Garden, then at Sanibel Seafood Grill on the 29th. And you can find a full performance schedule at royschneider.com. There you can also hear selections from previous albums there, as well as purchase those albums. The music is available also through iTunes. And of course, their new album, Reckless Saints, is going to be coming out in November. Many of the songs we've heard during our show today have been from that album. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
We are going to be doing a crowdfunding. Is it okay to mention that?
Please do.
Yeah, I'm making the video now. Within about the next week or so, we'll have an Indiegogo campaign
up. So if you're interested in pre-ordering, that helps us tremendously. And you can get all that information on our Facebook page, which would be Roy Schneider Music on Facebook or Reckless Saints on Facebook.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
And our show today was produced by Mike Canary and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tarek Halligan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. Let's hear one last song to take us out.
All right. I'll just tell you briefly, this is about my experience on The Voice in 2013, and I wasn't allowed to talk about it. That's why it's kind of all in code. 2Z ball.
Down on the land where the valley put back up to the sea, the lights of the angels. Thought I'd go as far as I could go and see what I could see. Under the lights of the angels. into a hardwood crate with the spirits I have made. Under the lights of the angels, tried and true, but too sacred for this journey I must take. Under the lights of the angels. So I packed my guitar and I traveled high and far, going west just like a young man on new wings. This is reality, they said. Say this line, turn your head, make like all you've ever wanted is to see. So I shrugged and I did my thing. Oh, many princesses and princes, there were knights in armor too. Under the lights of the angels, children running around in sparkly gowns, the likes they never knew. Under the lights of the angels, those shepherds dressed in white, and they told me of a key. Under the lights of the angels, said this ship is run by four horses seated by the sea. Under the lights of the angels, now the ocean's being opened, but too salty for the drink. So with an offering I took my place in line. As I stood on the edge of all I dreamed and all I've been, I heard a voice whispering, boy, doing fine, doing fine. Yeah, just do what you can do with that borrowed wine. All right. Thank you for real good times.